behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benson.
I'm Ben Bullen. Can we roll down the window?
A little under the weather?
Yeah, I'm just feeling, you know, a little dizzy, a little nauseous.
Yeah, most people might not know that we podcast in a moving vehicle.
Yeah, well, that's the only way we're going to do this show.
Of course, Car Stuff has to be done in a moving vehicle.
Yeah,
that's
the
only way
contract.
It works. Yeah, exactly. So, welcome to the show. And Ben,
yeah.
This is a serious topic, really. I mean, a lot of people really suffer with this.
Oh, yeah, right. We'll tell you that I am fine. That's just the magic of podcasting.
You know, but
sound like I have motion sickness.
I do, however, have a question for you. Do you suffer from motion sickness?
You know what's weird? I don't. My girlfriend, though, and my dad both have extreme cases of motion sickness. For me, I'll be honest with you, man. My girlfriend says it's the way that I drive.
Ah, you know, Ben.
What?
We didn't talk about this ahead of time.
No.
My wife suffers from motion sickness in a terrible way. I mean, everything. Boats, cars.
Yeah.
And also, my driving is blamed for her motion sickness all the time. I mean.
We're not the problem.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. And I can maybe back that up in this podcast. I'm going to try. But seriously, we didn't even talk about that.
No.
But my wife will get, she'll feel ill on an off ramp,
mm-hmm.
you know, on an on ramp to get on the highway, or she'll feel bad, you know, if we hit a bump too hard.
Wow.
I mean, it's really, really severe.
So before we go any further, I should say though that I'm completely the opposite. When I was on road trips, even as a little kid with my parents,
mm-hmm.
I would be fine, you know, reading a book or jumping around the back seat like some undersized orangutan.
Exactly. Now, my kid can play video games in the back and can read. And I don't remember if I was able to read or anything like that, but I would be able to sit in, you know, those station wagons that had the rear-facing seats?
Yeah.
No problem at all.
Which is a problem for some people.
In fact, I preferred that. And you know, if you go on a train, like an old-style passenger train, you know, just as a you know, weekend ride or something, you know, I don't mind being the one that faces backwards, you know, on like on the trolley or whatever
right,
you go
or
on.
Right, even on the MARTA.
Yeah, something like that. I really don't have a problem facing rearwards, but a lot of people have a lot of trouble with that. And we'll find that, you know, women are more prone to it than men, which is true, which I found kind of unusual, but I guess it's just the way it is. It's also true that it's better to be the driver than it is the passenger in a vehicle, which
that is true.
Is odd.
Yeah.
We're going to also find that there's a difference between straight line motion versus like circular or spinning motion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I find that, you know, I used to be able to handle spinning rides at you know, amusement parks much better than I can now. The spinning gets to me, but,
really?
You know, roller coasters don't bother me. Driving doesn't bother me. Boat rides don't bother me. Plane rides don't bother me. Anything like that. And we'll find that, you know, motion sickness really is what this is called. It's not just car sickness.
No.
It all falls under this one big umbrella of motion sickness.
Yeah. And as we like to do when we're exploring a topic like this, let's define it first.
Sure.
So motion sickness is a syndrome with the following symptoms. You get pallor, nausea, weakness, malaise, which I think is kind of vague. And this can progress to vomiting, to being incapacitated. And what it all goes back to really most times is going to be the canals of your ear, right? Your sense of equilibrium.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I just say one quick thing before we, at the end of this podcast, there's some new study that's going on that kind of refutes this.
Yep.
I'm not going to say anything more about it right now, but at the end, we've got something that will discount everything that we're saying at the beginning here about the inner ear. So stay tuned for the end, and you'll find somebody that has got some new and updated information about
this. Right. Yeah. The science of motion sickness is still very much in its pioneering field.
Yeah. I mean, we said this earlier. A lot of the stuff that we're talking about, this research was done like 50 or 60 years ago, and there hasn't been anything since. No one's really dug into it. They just said, well, motion sickness is what it is, and there's no definitive explanation for why motion sickness exists. There still isn't, which I find really, really crazy.
Yeah, it is strange. We have a couple of theories, but we're going to wait till the end.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Where do you want to go? Do you want to talk about how some of the old folklore cures?
You know, let's move on to something else, and we'll go back to folklore cures in just a second. But I do want to say that, like, get some more of the, I guess if you can call it science, from, you know, 50, 60 years ago,
sure,
what they did. And it is science, I guess.
Yes.
They figured out that, you know, people that had motion sickness or were prone to seasickness, air sickness, and the like, you know, they all have the same. If you're going to get car sick, you're going to get sick on a boat, you're going to get sick on a plane. They found that it has to do with your equilibrium. And your equilibrium, your balance, I guess. And
uh-huh,
equilibrium is what, as you mentioned, partly due to the fluid within the inner ear,
mm-hmm,
and the way that your body is oriented to the earth and everything around you. And this is how this goes, Ben. There are two different types of equilibriums.
Okay.
All right. There's a static equilibrium and there's a dynamic equilibrium. And I didn't know this before we read all this, so I'm reading this as we go here. But the static equilibrium is the orientation of the head and body relative to the ground. Okay, so your static equilibrium says that I'm standing on the ground, everything's fine, no problems at all. Or it says I'm in a vehicle and everything around me in that vehicle is moving at the same speed. So I know that I'm sitting in a chair because I can feel,
sure,
it on my back and on my legs and, you know, on my rear end. And I know that I'm firmly in this vehicle and the windshield and the dashboard and everything are moving at the same speed with me. Okay. Your dynamic equilibrium, which is the orientation of the head and body in response to sudden movements, that's what gets kind of screwed up in this whole thing, is that when you're in that vehicle and you're moving,
right,
and your body is saying, well, okay, everything around me stands still, but I'm seeing things on the horizon that are moving, like trees are going past me quickly, there's potholes in the road, so
sure,
that, you know, there's this bouncing motion, and I see that as well. When your static equilibrium and your dynamic equilibrium are at odds, when one of them says, I can see what's happening, but the other one is telling me this is happening. That's
okay,
where your body has this confusion, and the confusion is what causes that sickness, that nausea. Your body is kind of rejecting that idea. And I know it's kind of a vague way to say that your body's rejecting it, but it's really what's happening. Like, say you're on a ship,
uh-huh,
and heavy swells. And you know that the boat is staying relative to you, it's staying steady. Now, of course, you're probably moving a little bit,
right,
but let's say you're in a chair on that boat. And, or a sofa or whatever, and it's a cruiser, and you're sitting in that sofa and the boat is going up and down. Well, you're seeing the waves all around you moving. You're seeing the distance, you're seeing the shore moving because the boat is moving up,
right,
and down.
Yeah.
But your brain is confusing the signals between what's happening to your body, the way it feels like it's locked in place in that boat, and everything around it that's moving in this erratic and dramatic way.
So, two parts of your brain start arguing with each other.
That's it.
And it makes the rest of you sick.
Yeah, and this makes perfect sense to me why somebody would be ill if they're reading in a car. So, like, they're looking down, they're seeing, like, the newspaper or whatever it is, a book, maybe even a Kindle, something like that.
Right.
And they're reading, and they're holding it stationary in front of them, yet the peripheral vision is picking up telephone poles and trees and other vehicles and signs, and everything else is moving all around them, all the scenery.
Yeah.
And there may be some bouncing motion in the car, of course. They said the worst scenario for somebody who's motion sick is a slow-moving vehicle on a very rough road. Like, let's say you're approaching, recently I was on vacation, and we went to,
right,
a place that had it was very remote, and you have to drive in this shuttle that goes down this potholed road. It's almost like it looks like a moonscape of a road, you know, is what the
okay,
way I would say it. A
it's moon, got craters.
Big, huge craters, right? So we're kind of weaving and bobbing around all these things and going maybe, 5-10 miles an hour at the most. And there's a dramatic motion. You're really going into these things and back out.
Yeah.
They say that that's the absolute worst. If you're going in a slow vehicle with lots of motion, your mind is confused even more so than it would be if you're going quickly over something that's rough.
It's like a giant is sort of slowly shaking you.
Yeah, yeah. It's really a strange thing. But when you think about it in that way, it really kind of makes sense.
And there is good news, because we do know that the vast majority of motion sickness experiences,
mm-hmm,
are pretty mild and you can treat them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But not everything will work. Mm-hmm. So we've got a few things that definitely do work as folk remedies, a few things that don't work. And then, of course, there are pharmaceutical products.
Yeah, sure. There's Dramamine. There's,
sure,
the patch that you can put behind your ear. And I think that takes about a day to work. And, let's see, there's those wristband things that you can buy that apply pressure on the, so it's like an acupressure type thing. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff that works. I mean, Dramamine, that seems to work for my wife. We were on a cruise recently, mm-hmm, and we just got home and she feels like the house is moving. That, like, it's rocking back and forth.
Oh, because now has to acclimate herself to being a landlubber again.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, and even though that the motion on the boat bothered her and the Dramamine helped, once you get home, you still feel that rocking motion once the Dramamine wears off. So after 6 hours or whatever it is,
she's kind of swaying.
You feel like the car is moving that you're driving in. You feel like the house that you're standing in is moving, which you know it's not, but it's still your inner ear equilibrium thing is still off. And, you know, that inner ear thing that you mentioned, that there's more to it than that. I mean, it, you know, of course, ear infections early on in life can cause problems with this. You know, they can cause dizziness, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So the inner ear infections can cause all kinds of stuff. The fluid buildup in the ear kind of confuses the brains and eyes because there's pressures that build up that normally wouldn't be there.
Yeah, I can speak a little bit to that because the way that an ear is structured inside of an ear, it has there's a very thin membrane in your ear canal that separates your inner ear, your outer ear. And the idea for your equilibrium is to maintain the same relative pressure on either side. And so when you have fluid building up in your ears, you're chewing something or you swallow and you hear that click in your ears.
Yes.
It's a little bit of fluid going down your Eustachian tube, which is sort of right by the edge of your jaw. And I know this because I had a lot of ear problems as a kid. And when that stuff is blocked, that means that your inner ear is not able to adjust to the pressure of your outer.
Ambient pressure outside.
That's
right?
A perfect word, Scott. Yeah. Thank you. And that's part of the reason why your ears will pop when you dive into a swimming pool. It's also part of the reason why it is the reason why when you're in a plane, it can be tough to hear because of the pressure differences.
Or even driving through the mountains. I mean,
that's a great example.
We drive, or at least I drive back and forth, you know, between Michigan and here occasionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, high altitudes, my ears will feel pressure. And then the decreases as you go, they kind of pop. It's not uncommon for it to happen on even at relatively low altitudes. But, you know, planes, of course. I mean, you always hear, you know, when kids are crying on planes a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of parents get a lot of guff for that, but there's really not a whole lot you can do about a kid because their ears are just driving them crazy and you can't tell, you know, a toddler, somebody who's too young to really understand, you got to chew gum, they can't, or you've got to, they oftentimes will give them a bottle because that's the same type of motion as like a chewing would be in it and it relieves the pressure. So crying kids on a plane when it's taking off and landing, there's just not a lot you can do about it. So, you know, give those people some slack, I guess, on that one.
So chewing gum is a common remedy.
Does it work? Well, maybe it depends on the type of gum, Ben, because we're talking about car sickness. So we're talking about somebody who's trying to alleviate not just the pressure. I mean, you know, you're working on keeping the pressure the same. I understand that. But we're talking about remedies for car sickness or motion sickness. So if you're chewing gum, you may want to chew peppermint gum.
Why is that?
Ah, because peppermint of any kind, you know, candy, like you would suck on the candy. You wouldn't chew the candy, of course, but, or peppermint gum. I guess you could chew that. But I guess the peppermint in some way eases some of the nausea. And I think it's just, maybe the cooling sensation, the feel of the cooling sensation. There's a lot of these things that, you know, not quite explained why they're a remedy, but they are like folk remedies that have been passed down generation from generation.
And actually do work. But one thing for cars is, the idea that you roll down the window, right? If you just roll down the window and get some fresh air, that's what people are always saying. This magical fresh air is going to.
But does it work?
You know, my girlfriend swears by it.
No kidding. So it does work sometimes, but I think a lot of people have, I've seen a lot of people have written in that said, people always tell me to roll down the window and that never helps.
Well, what if it's like a placebo effect thing? Or what, I think as we're going to find, a lot of it depends on where you're looking, even more so than where you're sitting. But before we do that, yes. And we can also say that going back to motion sickness, this is something that you can have your entire life and you can find remedies to alleviate the symptoms, but not to cure it completely.
That's right. And these remedies, these folk remedies that we talked about, we just mentioned peppermint, right? And chewing gum.
Yeah.
And the other one, there's a lot of them, I should say. Another one that's very popular is ginger.
Yeah. Even just having ginger ale.
Yeah. Which a lot of people had said, My parents would always give me ginger ale and saltine crackers, and that would keep me from feeling ill. As we find out later, lightly salty snacks are something that would keep motion sickness down, apparently,
yeah,
as far as folk remedies go.
Right.
You know, we're not really testifying that any of these really happen, but the ginger in ginger ale is what's doing it for you. It's not just that it's a soda. It's a carbonated beverage.
Right.
The idea is that, you know, ginger as itself, you know, whether it's the fresh root or teas or capsule or you know, the candied slices that you can get, ginger itself is what's helpful. It prevents motion sickness. It cures the nausea that goes along with it. And a lot of women that are pregnant even swear by ginger that, you know, it will alleviate morning sickness.
Yeah.
The same thing. The motion sickness, morning sickness thing, as we find out, has a definite tie-in. So kind of interesting. There's a lot more folk remedies.
Right. Yeah. And, like the idea of smelling newspaper.
That's such an interesting one.
Yeah.
I mentioned this one last night at dinner to my wife because, you know, we were talking about, you know, what we were going to do today. And I said, I think I may have a solution. You just need to smell newspaper. And she looked at me like I was just crazy, absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's one of these folk remedies that seems to work. Now, reading the newspaper may make you sick.
Huh?
So don't do that. But it's good to have the newspaper with you in the car because whatever is in newspaper, for whatever reason, it somehow alleviates that motion sickness. And if you don't have, I don't know how you would not have access to a newspaper these days,
right.
But, I mean, even if it's just buying one on the street corner for a quarter, but you could go to an arts and crafts store and buy the same type of paper that they print newspaper on. That they print the news on, I should say, and just have that in the car with you. And you don't have to have anything to read. Just smell the paper. And apparently it helps you.
See, this is strange because, Scott, you and I found so many things that people swear by, but that they don't have anything other than anecdotal evidence for.
Well, also like the listening to music. They say that just keeps your mind off of it.
Yeah,
and
that's fluffy.
They say the same thing with the wristbands, that the pressure is what keeps your mind off of being motion sick, but I don't think so.
It reminds me a little bit about the rabbit hole conversation that everybody has at least once. Which is the cure for hiccups.
Ah, yes.
And I know that as we're saying, I know some of you guys out there listening just said, yeah, well, I know the cure for hiccups and everybody's wrong, or I know the real cure.
Everybody has their own cure.
Everybody has their own cure.
Their own theory.
Yeah, sure. And we found that this is kind of the same way with motion sickness. There are people who say, you know, eat something sour, eat a pickle or a tamarind.
Eat a dill pickle. I just can't. I think that would make me more ill than anything. If you're already feeling a little bit nauseous, but I think the idea is to prevent it, that you would do this ahead of time before you even become ill.
Well, no, and also, to be fair, you and I are kind of uptight about eating in the car.
A little bit. That's right. Yeah. So even like the mention of saltines or anything that's slightly salty, a lot of people say 7-Up or Cola over Ice, I think, is another one. But, you know, ginger ale was the definite winner in this. A lot of people said ginger ale is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And apparently that goes back to the, any kind of ginger slices or, you know, whatever.
But, well, it's because it has those anti-emetic or nausea-preventing effects.
Yeah, and there's also things, Ben, like there's simple things, too. If you feel a little nauseous, pull the car over and take a walk for 2 minutes. You know, just get some fresh air, relax, get out of the vehicle. You know, your body knows what speed it's moving when you're walking. You know, your static and your dynamic equilibrium are balanced at that point. So maybe, you know, a five-minute walk through a park or something is enough to cure your motion sickness.
Now, another thing that you can do, and this is what we talked about before our break, is realize that part of what's happening with your body is that this conflicting information is coming about because your body is not able to figure out where it is in terms of velocity, right? Mm-hmm. And to do that, you need a reference point. So just something as simple as looking out at the horizon will help your body understand. And that goes exactly to why where you're sitting in the car makes a huge difference, right?
Exactly. So, you know, the idea is that you're not looking at something to the side of the vehicle as you're driving.
Right.
You're not looking at, you know, the trees passing by or the cornfields, you know, that you can watch the cornfields as you drive by and they kind of like look like they're kind of smacking into each other as you drive. The strange little tricks that your eyes play on you as you're driving, things like that will bother you. But if you look ahead and to the distance, something far away that's not really moving all that much, you know, that it's steady. And same thing on a boat. You know, you're looking at the horizon, or you're looking at, you know, maybe some land that's far ahead or something like that. That helps. It doesn't totally prevent it. I mean, people that get seasickness are going to be seasick, probably, if the seas are rough enough.
But this goes to why drivers get carsick, not seasick, much less often. Because if you think about it, a driver's focusing on the road, they're staring at the horizon.
I'm still confused about the driver-passenger thing because now this is just a, an example.
Okay.
All right. I have a manual transmission in my car. Mm-hmm. My wife has an automatic transmission. She swears that when I'm driving my manual transmission car, she's more ill feeling often than she is in her, when I'm driving her automatic transmission. So it doesn't matter who's driving.
Yeah.
It's just the smooth motion of the automatic transmission versus the, you know, the acceleration, then the slight back off before the next gear picks up. Now, I mean, I'm a fairly smooth shifter but at this point. I've been driving a long, long time.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how are you shifting?
I mean, sometimes, you know, if you're really out, you know, having fun, but I will never, ever drive the way I drive alone with her in the car.
Right.
I drive fast and pretty aggressive on my own, you know, if I'm out in the country somewhere.
Sure.
You know, a time and a place, as we always say.
Yeah, but, a time and a place.
But she can recall when she was a kid, her father always owned Corvettes. And he had one, you know, every 5-6 years or whatever, get a new one. But it was a manual transmission all the time. And she recalls that feeling of that pulling feeling of, you know, first gear and then a little let off and then second gear, a little let off. And that pulling motion is what really gets her. So it's straight line acceleration. It's turning. It's spinning. It's up down motion. It's everything that really bothers her all in the manual transmission cars. And I don't know if it's just an association at this point or what.
Yeah, but, oh, buddy, the odds are stacked against you.
I guess so. So I'm kind of thinking my next car maybe needs to be an automatic, even though, you know, that may not be the most exciting choice.
Well, you know, when you love someone.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm not saying that I don't love her. I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I'm saying we'll see how this, this car selection goes.
You know, I was thinking about this because it does – I think there's a big anticipatory – aspect to this, because when you are driving, even if you are someone prone to motion sickness, I bet you it's not as bad for your wife because, if she's driving, right? If she's driving a manual, does she drive a manual?
She does not.
Okay. Well, that's part of it.
Maybe that is part of it.
But, when she's driving or when anyone is driving, we have this luxury of knowing what's coming up next.
That I think is critical.
Yeah.
I really do, because if you put me in a car with somebody who's maybe not so great at shifting an automatic or rather a manual transmission vehicle, I may feel a little bit of motion sickness because of that motion. Because I'm not really sure when they're going to shift or when they're going to turn left or right or whatever. I guess as a driver, you can anticipate what's going on. That's a very good point.
That's a big part.
But it's an odd thing, Ben, that no one's really delved into this in like 50 or 60 years, apparently.
People still don't really understand.
But, you know, as we promised, there's some new thought on this whole subject. And, and I think this is maybe the last thing we want to wrap up with here.
Okay.
There is a guy, his name is Dr. Thomas Stoffregen, I think is how you say it. It's Stoffregan or E-N. And he's from the University of Minnesota. And he has created something called the Moving Room. And this sounds terrible to some people, but it is a motion sickness inducing chamber, which sounds like a torture device to a lot of people, I'm sure. A motion sickness inducing chamber. And he wants to find out what causes motion sickness because, you know, again, the study of motion sickness really hasn't progressed beyond, you know, stuff from 1950, 1960.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of like, if you want to picture where the science is at now, it's like we have a jigsaw puzzle, but we don't have the pieces all put together yet.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned inner ear earlier, and I think a lot of people attribute this whole thing to the inner ear and the equilibrium and all that.
That's the current prevalent theory.
I do understand that, and this does have something to do with it, but he is going to say that a disturbance in it's more of a disturbance in the body system for maintaining posture. So he's blaming posture for this whole thing.
I thought you were going to say a disturbance in the force. That was your Star Wars
reference. Disturbance in the force, sure. Yeah, that's what he's saying it is. But I mean, and I didn't know this. Reading this article from, again, where was it? The New York Times.
Yeah.
From September of last year. So it's really not that long ago when we first heard about this, but, he said that Charles Darwin was perpetually seasick. So you'd think that somebody who's, you know, well traveled like that wouldn't be, but, you know, even him, he called it pandemonium when he got sick. You know, the word nausea, is derived from the Greek word for boat. And, you know, it may come about by a lot of people associate it with riding a boat or riding a, like a carnival attraction ride, you know, like
sure.
the tilt-a-whirls, I think what they mentioned here. But Charles Darwin called it pandemonium when it happens. I mean, I guess it was just miserable for him.
And we know that, okay, so the theory that we have been talking about is a very old theory called sensory conflict theory. Just like you and I said it earlier, the parts of your brain are disagreeing with some of the sensory information from your body. But then there are other ones. We didn't mention this one yet. This is from the same article. In 1977, a guy named Dr. Treisman had this idea that maybe motion sickness evolved as a way to cope with food poisoning.
Yeah. So back in 1977, this guy is saying, you know, maybe it's a way for our body to detect if there's kind of a some type of poison in our body.
Right.
A way to get rid of that. You know, there's something not right. The brain is sending signals that are saying, you know, like let's say that your stomach didn't detect that there is a poison there in whatever you just
you got some bad chicken.
Exactly. You got some bad chicken, and your stomach didn't detect it, but the rest of your body is saying that we got to get a way to get this thing out of here. They're coping. It's like a coping mechanism. It's functioning in place of that system. So, you know, this 1977 study is really the last thing between, you know, then and now. I mean, he says that the research is like 30 to 50 years old. Here's the quote, actually. Most of the research is 30 to 50 years old, even though it's extremely prevalent. I mean, a lot of people suffer from motion sickness. But he says that, you know, it's generally accepted that a functioning vestibular system is prerequisite for motion sickness. And there's this other weird study that happened in 1968. They found that deaf participants who were exposed to 40-foot swells off the shores of Nova Scotia, and they were in this narrow wooden boat. It says that the deaf participants in this procedure did not experience any seasickness. Now, I don't know if that was ever proven. That I mean, it seems like there's just not enough information there to determine.
Yeah, we need more data.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, this whole stable posture thing, he's saying that humans have become nauseated in situations where they haven't yet learned strategies effective in maintaining a stable posture. So they're saying that you're a little bit unsteady on your feet. You're a little off balance.
Everybody
all the time.
Sways a little when they walk.
A little bit. And I'll tell you, my wife has the worst balance ever. She can't walk on, you know, if there's a board, you know, between two bricks.
Oh man.
She couldn't walk that board. I mean, her balance is way off, and it's got to be, you know, something with the equilibrium, the inner ear. And I think that really has a lot to do with the motion sickness. Now, how about your girlfriend? Does she have a balance issue?
I got to plead the fifth, Scott. What are you doing?
No. I'm just saying, like, have you noticed that, or has she said anything about that? Cause, you know, there are times when it's critical, or not critical, but, you know, you maybe want to, you're taking a walk in the woods and there's a fallen tree across a stream and you want to cross and, you know, she says, no, I'm going to go on to the bridge. You can do the tree.
Oh yeah. Well, that's maybe more difference in our personalities. I am the walker of the tree, but you know what? I'm going to have to do an experiment and check, with her secretly. So nobody tell her that I'm testing her balance.
That was unfair that I said that, but I guess what he's saying is, you know, this, Thomas Stoffergen is saying that, there's kind of a natural wobble or a posture sway in a lot of people. And he even found that, you know, video gamers, they found if their head swayed more, he said that afterward they were more likely to experience symptoms of motion sickness, which I found strange. I mean, that's an unusual place to go. But he's also taken a look at pregnant women and decided that, you know, women who experience motion sickness also exhibit more swaying in their posture. So he's trying to tie this whole thing in with posture and your balance and how you cope with that. And this motion sickness chamber, Ben, this sounded kind of like a fun thing. A little bit fun, I guess, for somebody who doesn't mind it. You stand on something that's really small, like a small box, and then he's able to control the motion of the walls around you with kind of a nondescript pattern on the wall. I think they called it a marbling pattern.
Yeah.
And like he said, you could stand on the box and then suddenly he'll move in the two outer walls in about a foot and a half. And he says most participants throw up their hands in the air and they fall backwards immediately.
Well, because there's not much for you to fix your eyes on. It's designed to give you that sickness, and it looks like it works.
And it's so strange. I mean, to think, though, that you could be standing on a stationary box and then one of the walls moves, which, you know, is really – there's something going to happen there. I mean, you know something's going to move. But their perception, even though you're ready for it, you know, the walls move in. You throw up your hands in the air, you flail your arms around, and you fall off the thing backwards. That's a dramatic response to something.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to tell you, one of the dumbest things I tried to do to test my one of my friends who had motion sickness.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, hey, if you have motion sickness, why don't you? It's probably because you're sitting still in, you know, in the shotgun seat of my car mm-hmm. while we're driving. So why don't you move your legs like you're running?
That's a folk remedy that probably didn't pan out.
It did not work.
I wouldn't think so. Like you're going to run like you're running at 55 miles an hour.
He was saying, you mean like we're in a Flintstones car? I said, yeah, give it a shot. I felt bad because it looked kind of dumb.
Science sometimes fails us, Ben.
Hey, you know.
You know, okay. Well, there's the last thing I guess that I want to point out right here is that this Thomas Stoffergen from the University of Minnesota, he's saying that until, I mean, his studies are kind of showing him that until new movement patterns have been learned by the person that, you know, experiences motion sickness, until you understand, you know, how to move, how to sway. And he even tied this into boxers. I should mention that. Boxers who take punches in the ring. He said he can kind of determine if a boxer is going to feel ill after just a couple of punches to the head.
By their sway of their posture.
Exactly. He can look at them ahead of time and determine, you know, how they're going to react. Which might not be bad for betting, I guess.
No.
But he says until these new movement patterns are learned by the person that experiences sickness, until your body's posture maintenance system, I think is what he calls it, your body's systems rebel. And that includes, you know, your head communicating with your stomach. And that's why you often become physically ill, why you would vomit in that case. So, it's a real weird thing on how all these systems work together. And when signals are crossed, when, you know, the static and dynamic, equilibriums are not telling each other the same things, your stomach is what gets the final vote on this whole thing. It says, no, that's not right. I'm rebelling.
Yeah. Your stomach gets the veto power.
Yes.
Well, I think we've about wrapped it up. Do you want to do some listener mail?
I'd like to, yeah.
All right, Scott. Babak H. writes to us. That's B-A-B-A-K. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. And says, hi, my name is Babak. I am originally from Iran, currently living in British Columbia, Canada. Always been a big fan of American cars, though Iranian people love BMWs and Benzes. I have partially restored a 62 Tempest Le Mans, and at this moment, I have a very clean and drivable 1973 Nova Straight 6. He said, my newer car is a 2005 Dodge Magnum RT with the mighty 5.7 Hemi. I really love to hear an episode about Hemi engines and history and get some interesting info from you guys. I tried to find stuff on the net, but there were just bits and pieces. Thanks for the show. I appreciate the fact that you guys have a lot of experience in the field, but you speak in very nice and clean language and don't try to talk like some phony tough guy.
I remember this email, Ben, and I thought that was good because, you know, we occasionally will get some letters that give us a little guff for not being, more rough around the edges.
We're a little too nice.
It doesn't happen all that often, but sometimes people write in and say, hey, why don't you guys create a little ruckus? Why don't you yell at each other? Why don't you practically arm wrestle over who's right or wrong, you know? And we have a different style.
Well, we do have some differing opinions too.
We definitely do. We talk things out, but we don't feel necessary to scream and yell and use coarse language, I guess, maybe to get our point across. But you know, it's a different show. If you want that, you can get that somewhere else. But you know, we find that, you know, our style is working for us, and I appreciate him pointing that out. That's good. And I also want to say one last thing.
What's that?
That 62 Tempest. Is that what he said he has?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Or had, I guess, maybe.
I think he has it.
And the Nova with the straight six. And, of course, the Hemi engine and the, was it Charger? Challenger?
It's Magnum. Dodge Magnum.
Magnum. Okay, that's still cool. So those are some great cars.
Yeah, and I think it'd be cool to do an episode on that engine because it is tremendously popular.
Yeah, we should just do a Hemi engine podcast. That's a very good idea. I'm going to write that down as soon as we leave here.
And speaking of leaving here, we are off. We hope you enjoyed our examination of motion sickness and got some tips and tricks to avoid it. We hope that you are not suffering from motion sickness right now. If you're standing, a little pro tip, you can widen your stance, and the doctors say that might help.
Posture is the key, apparently.
Posture is apparently the key. Thanks so much for tuning in. Drop us a line on carstuffshow.com. You can see us on Facebook. You can see us on Twitter. You can send us an email directly. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.